Welcome to College Football Roundtable, your source for college football coverage, including major storylines,
playoffs,
can't miss game previews, and picks each week. Join your hosts, Dan, Rob, and Jordan at the roundtable for a show unlike anything else. As for Football presents the College Football Roundtable.
Welcome back. The first round is over. The quarterfinals are done, and they're in the books. We're headed into the semifinals. We have two shows left this season, which is crazy. It's hard to believe. 2025 is upon us. Happy New Year, everyone. Holy smokes. And we're going to have a post-championship review after this, but this is probably going to be our last big show going into the semifinal game. What's up, Trash Talkers? Welcome back to the College Football Roundtable, or if you prefer, you call it Ring Knocker Radio. We got an extra ring knocker today, and I'm your host, Rob, in Fayetteville, North Carolina. You know me as the Angry Colonel. We got Daniel Icabesa calling out of Coastal Connecticut. We got Trigger Joe from the home of the Big House, and we've got Omar, the Burger Popper. Joining us from parts unknown, he is an undisclosed location. Ha ha ha! But honestly, great to have everybody back. It's been about a month. How are the holidays? And how are things going on your end, Dano, Joe, and then Omar?
Holidays were great. You know, I had my kids home. Took up what I can only describe as a full-on college football break after the Army Navy game. You know, checked in long enough to watch the semifinal games and to, you know, watch Army's bowl game. But I've really kind of leaned into my family and have sort of stayed abreast at a distance of college football. And I kind of hate that, but on the other hand, I need a little space. So I feel better. I'm totally ready to watch the last set of games. I definitely believe we got the best four teams, however the hell we got there. So, yeah, it's been good.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts, but I can agree with you. Leaning into family is always good during the holidays. And, yeah, there's some football, too. So, Omar, how about you? How was your holidays and bowl watching season?
It was swell. I guess those parts unknown that you mentioned, I'm now here in Georgia for a career course. I'm sure you guys had a point in your guys' military career, like, wow, where did the time go? And about to be a captain. So it means I'll take it seriously now. I'm just kidding. I don't want to alarm any of our I don't want to alarm any of our viewers. But so yeah, that's why, I mean, I'm on PCS leave. I wanted to imitate you guys with the beard and everything, you know. I was inspired by Fall Guy, watching Ryan Gosling just, you know, prance around with the beard. But enough of that. That aside, it's been good. Man, just moved out here. I spent most of December preparing to move out here to Augusta, enjoying the fruits of PCS leave, which was much needed after XO time. But yeah, it was great. I went to the Independence Bowl, which I don't know if you guys want me to talk about now or later on.
Yeah, we'll hold off on that one. But we certainly want to get your deep dive into it, because again, like, a lot of us have watched college football games and gone to football games. Not very many of us has had the experience of watching a bowl live, particularly kind of from the sidelines and behind the scenes. Joe, how about you? How was your holidays and weekend?
Oh, the holidays was great. You know, with two boys under the age of four, it was just one screaming boy to the next for 24 hours straight. But hey, that's what being a dad's about sometimes when you decide to make babies in your 40s. But holidays were great. And, you know, the first thing I got to mention is that my Michigan Wolverines may have had a down season, but they sure did end in good form. The only team outside of the SEC to ever beat Alabama twice in a calendar year. And they did it with primarily backups in the second one. The fact that they ended on bright days for Michigan, you know, made these playoffs a little bit easier for me to watch. And I do remember Dano busting my chops earlier this year about loving Ohio State. But I also, you know, said that when they lost to Oregon midseason, they weren't a team yet. And because most of those guys were first-year players for Ohio State, and they have gelled and they have figured it out. They're kind of like a Duke team with a bunch of freshman McDonald's All-Americans. You may get them early in the season. You don't want them in March. And it looks like, you know, to go off a little off script, it looks like the Buckeyes have it rolling. They know where their weapons are, and their weapons needed that punch in the mouth from the Michigan Wolverines. So you're welcome, Buckeye Nation. Roll Michigan. You might not be here. You might have laid that egg against Tennessee. So glad they got. I bet they're glad they got that one out of the way now.
Yeah, for sure. Fair play. So for me, I watched a lot of bowl games. I think the biggest thing for me is, like, before Christmas and after Christmas bowl games. The ones before Christmas, I think, fell victim to a lot of the opt-outs, and I'm really kind of disappointed in that. And then I think that, you know, the opt-out of all opt-outs was Cam Ward bailing on his team at halftime, like, hey, man, I'm done. And, you know, losing a close one that was probably winnable, particularly like if your QB1 sticks in there. And again, I don't know that how that's going to affect his draft status. But I would tell you that, like, if I'm a coach in a professional setting, and guess what, guys, if you are playing college football now and you are receiving name, image, and likeness money, you are a professional. So if you do stuff like that, that's actually going to hurt your opportunities in the future rather than help you. But that's just a matter of opinion, but we could talk about that later. I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about Army's performance in the bowl game against Louisiana Tech. Hats off to the Bulldogs for stepping up and actually putting a team on the field when other people chose to opt out. And, hey, Bryson Daly had a, you know, great single season rushing performance, number one quarterback in the history of college football scoring touchdowns. Actually had the touchdown record for the season as well with 32. And we watched a little Ashton Dente lay an egg in the bowl game, which was interesting because, again, a lot of people were talking strength of schedule and that kind of stuff. We'll dive a little bit deeper into that as we roll into this. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of us had the opportunity to watch a lot of bowl games from home, but not very many of us get to watch a bowl game from the stadium. So we're going to pass it over to Omar and give us a little bit of an overview on the Independence Bowl experience. And seeing that this was the first time that Army has been in the Independence Bowl in almost 30 years, you know, pretty crazy. But it's also, you know, a great experience to see a football game live, but let alone be on the sidelines for the bowl. So without further ado, we'll pass it over to Omar.
Oh, thanks, Rob. So first off, I want to preface a couple of things. Like, if you're a college football fan, just watching as casual Army fan or not, I think if you're going to go to a college football game all year, I think you should just support your local bowl game. If it's within reason, if it's like a 7-hour drive, I don't care. Like, make that drive with your family because, man, going to bowl games is great. And not this year, just because everything happened PCS move. Like, my family do a family bowl trip over winter break. Plan on doing that tradition when I start my own family, just like driving to whatever bowl game as an excuse for family bonding to watch more football at neutral sites. But bowl games are just so great because it's the fabric of the sport and it's a celebration. And with the celebration, like, seeing Bryson Daly break the touchdown record was amazing because it was a celebration. Like, it reminded me of when Navy played Middle Tennessee in 2013 in the Armed Forces Bowl. Do Navy fans remember the game exactly? No, but, you know, Keenan Reynolds tacked on his record, got 30 touchdowns, and it was great. So it was fun seeing that. It was fun seeing some the seniors get sent out. It was fun seeing Tyrell Robinson hit the edge one more time, right, after having a couple seasons taken away. David Crossan, I had no idea that man had no catches, but, man, like, it almost felt like a movie, him getting his only catch of his career and then in the Independence Bowl, 50 yards at that, so it was great. But to my bigger point, I loved Independence Bowl because of the history, and I'm sure you guys saw my thread before the game, just showcasing the history of the game, because I sense a lot of Army fans, and yeah, granted, the Navy loss, I was in shock. I did not have any words during that whole fourth quarter. My wife said you were really quiet because I was in shock, and I mean, but I know, like, that was not a reason to, like, to throw the season away, to forget about everything. And so in doing that thread, I realized that history of the Independence Bowl is just so amazing. It's probably one of the best bowl games a Group of Five team can get outside of the New Year's Bowls with all the history and everything. It's as good as it gets, really. And I'm going to say this is my big statement. The college football media, the mainstream media, does not want you to care about bowl games. They don't want you to care about wins over Group of Fives. They want you to care. They don't care about moments like what we experienced in the Independence Bowl. They want you to think that the pinnacle of your postseason experience is beating a Power Five team, right? That's why the best Group of Five teams play Power Five teams or Power Four teams, whatever, in their bowl games. And so with that, like, without any storytelling, like, added in, without knowing the 30 years that we waited to win this bowl title, without knowing about 2020, people would think this is a meaningless game in a crap city. No offense to people at Shreveport. I had a great experience, but people think Shreveport isn't a great destination, right? And, you know, proves nothing. But the history of the bowl game, being able to etch ourselves in the nearly 50-year history of this bowl game, something I saw with both Coach Cumbie and Coach Monken in the press conference, being in awe of playing a bowl with such tradition. And I think it's a stark contrast, not to knock down anything that our rivals in Annapolis did in bowl season, right? You know, beating Oklahoma is amazing, but I really feel like a lot of the way that they feel that they're feeling right now is kind of directed by the main college football media, where they want your postseason game to be important if you play someone like an Oklahoma, right? But all bowl games are great, especially the ones with history like the Independence Bowl, where it's truly all that a town has. And with that as well, I think I also want to kind of wag my finger at the Army fan base talking about, oh, you beat Oklahoma's freshman and everything. It's like you can't have it both ways. You can't want to play a Power 4 team but dismiss when another Power 4 team, when another team plays a Power 4 team, saying, oh, it was their freshman. Like, you can't have it both ways. But overall, just a great experience. The stadium is old, it's historic and everything. It was everything I would have wanted with Army's bowl games. And for the young folks watching in the first season already, I've been quoted as saying in other group chats that bowl games made by ESPN, like the Armed Forces Bowl, have no aura. I don't know if this is the first time aura has been used on the podcast, but it's just my opinion, because there's no history. They're made by ESPN. They're played in a campus stadium. And it's like this, you know, yeah, sometimes you play cool opponents, but this just feels like a road, like, you know, there's no history or no, like, bull feel to it. But long-winded or not, I enjoyed the experience, met some great journalists and everything. And I guess one more thing what I'll leave off with is I was inspired by Dano's piece after the Army-Navy game about finding his place in Long Gray Line. And granted, I got myself in hot water with my wife preparing for the PCS move and going to the Independence Bowl and everything. Got myself in hot water. But the situation's good now. But I thought to myself, I'm like, I cried on my dad's couch when I was 10 years old because Army didn't make the Eagle Bank Bowl in RFK Stadium. It's like, why wouldn't I watch Army play in the Independence Bowl? Because, you know, I've been waiting years for this. Like, I waited my whole childhood to see Army be in moments like this. So it was just beautiful.
Awesome. All right, Dano, Joe, I know you said you guys got a comment. So
yeah, what? So I just, when you're talking about David Crossan, I would just like to point out to the folks who have read Azure Football all year, they put that pass to the tight end into the playbook in summer camp. It has been in the playbook all year. They practiced it all the time. That is not like a new play. There was, you know what I'm saying? And the fact that they finally broke it out in the freaking bowl game is nuts. But if we don't see more passes to the tight ends next year, I will be extremely surprised. Of course, I wrote before the season started that I thought we were going to see quite a few passes to the tight ends this year. We didn't see any. So, what do I know? But I'm just saying, like, that is a base play that they finally broke out in the last game of the season.
Yeah, very happy to see that. Joe, how about you?
Oh, I just heard Omar touching on, like, the majesty of the Independence Bowl, and I thought, what did it mean to me? It meant FanDuel was stupid enough to give me Bryson Daly even money to score, too. So him breaking the record was magical for Trigger Joe because I hit a seven-leg parlay.
Nice.
The inner 15-year-old in me would be remiss if he didn't mention that because I'm an immature NCO. But we also have a new King of the North, gents, in case you didn't see that last night.
Nice.
I had to wear my Lions gear once for the season.
Yeah, for sure. And I would tell you that, like, you know, looking at the Independence Bowl, and I think the term aura is fair, right? Because I think there's a lot of games that really are meaningless, or like they've gone through like different iterations of like clown shoe, right? Like not to dunk on Snoop, because Snoop is an icon of our generation of hip hop mogul. But the fact that the Snoop Dogg has the Arizona Iced Tea Bowl or something crazy like that, like it really lends to, you know, how these bowls are just kind of pulled out of thin air sometimes, right? Now, somebody that will not pull anything out of thin air, but could get you in a home. And hey, if she keeps selling houses the way that she does, she might even host her own bowl game. We have the realtor for you if you're moving to the PCS area, or your PCS is the Fort Liberty area. It's Jocelyn Bradley. She's a realtor for you. She's a veteran who spent her Army career in logistics. There she discovered her passion for making a difference in people's lives. She's committed to helping her clients find their dream homes when they're in the market, and provides exceptional service when she's working for you. Jocelyn also has an extended network of veteran realtors who can support you if you're moving anywhere else in the country. So if you're in the market for a home, Jocelyn should be your first call. Jocelyn's decided to support us here at Ask for Football for the season, and she is the right person to get you into the home of your dreams. Gentlemen, we are going to move into the semifinal preview. So the first game we're going to talk about is Ohio State versus Texas, but let's talk about a little bit how we got here. So this game is going to be in Arlington, Texas, so that's essentially a home game for the Texas Longhorns. The Buckeyes having probably had the most disappointing regular season loss in a while. You know, everything looked as if they were going to roll over Michigan, and they got stung, and they lost it, which is pretty interesting because they didn't play to the amount of NIL money that was dumped into the team. They missed the Big Ten championship, and then they came out swinging, you know, in the first round of the playoffs. The Buckeyes hammered Tennessee, and that, like they took something from them. Sorry, Dano, but they beat them up pretty bad. Then to follow up on the Rose Bowl, you know, should have been expected, but not with the volume or style. I think everybody expected a pretty close game between Oregon and the Buckeyes because, you know, the Ducks had the edge on them because they beat them in the regular season. But, you know, historically, and not to say that, you know, history matters, but sometimes it does, you know, the Oregon Ducks are 0-4 against the Buckeyes in the Rose Bowl. So they had quite a few matchups when they were Pac-10 guys or Pac-12 guys and the Buckeyes beat them, you know, 3 out of the 4 games that they played prior to the bowl game this weekend. And then, dude, Buckeyes were up 34 points in the first half. In the waning moments, Dylan Gabriel, you know, puts together a drive. They score some points and get a 2-point conversion going to halftime, looking like, hey, you know, is there something that we can do here? And even Dan Landing, you could tell he was shell-shocked when he did the second half interview. Anyway, the only redeeming thing for the Ducks was that Dylan Gabriel tied Case Keenum's freaking total TD passing record and without much fanfare going into the second half. The Longhorns' pass to the semi was pretty bumpy. Texas having the distinction of playing the same team twice and being one of the only teams in major college football to lose to the same team 2 times in a row. Mm. They lost to Georgia. You know, the 2 losses to Georgia made the Longhorns look more like a quality Big 12 team rather than an SEC world beater that everybody was projecting them to be this season. And again, they lost to the Bulldogs in overtime in the conference championship. You know,
without Georgia's quarterback.
Yeah.
They lost to Georgia when Georgia could do nothing but hand off and play defense. And
yeah.
Let's not forget, they almost lost to Scatty Boo Boo, a.k.a. Mike Allstott 2.0 in Arizona State. They barely got out of that game.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Would you?
I do call him Scatty Boo Boo.
Yeah, the question that you have to ask, though, is like, do you think Dabo was more prepared going into that game, or was it because, like, Texas was nicked up going in against Clemson, you know? I mean, it's interesting to see. It's kind of hard to judge, but, you know, all the time that you hear – people talk about the prognosticators and the analysis folks are saying, like, Quinn Ewers is still hurt. You know, how bad is that Abtair? You know, like, that has ended careers for some people. I mean, like, if you remember old Bill Goldberg back in the day from the freaking Atlanta Falcons, that's what put him into professional wrestling, was a torn ab. So who knows what's going on with the injury? And then the other part of it is, if you got a kid like Arch Manning, like, roll the dice, man. What is Shark thinking? You know, and they didn't even use him in like special situations where they had done earlier in the season. So it's interesting to see like what's going on, where they're leaning into, and how things are going. Right now, Texas is a 5.5-point dog going into Jerry World. The over-under at the game is 53.5, and I pulled that a couple days ago off of FanDuel. Takes on the game. We'll go Omar, Joe, and then Dano. What do you think, guys?
Yeah, I think, first off, I think it's interesting, though. Like, something I just realized is, like, Texas hasn't been in the Cotton Bowl for, like, a very long time, which is, like, really weird to think. Like, they're pretty much ingrained in the history of that bowl game, like, winning the Southwest Conference that much. Just something that came to mind, not originally in my notes. But I honestly think, like, I think that Ohio State will cover. Not that I'm looking for this from a betting perspective, but I'm honestly thinking Ohio State wins by at least a touchdown, 10, 13 points. Because if you look at the way Texas's defense played against Arizona State was missing – like their lead wide receiver, right? They're missing lead wide receiver, Jordan Tyson, 1,000 yards. Their next leading wide receiver, not even counting Cam Scataboo, who had 600 receiving yards or however many receiving yards before that. Their next leading receiver had 19 catches, like wide out. Now they got to defend Jeremiah Smith, who, of course, is MHJ 2.0. And Ohio State's got 2 900-yard rushers. Like, I don't want to count any team out before the game begins, especially a team that I don't even want to say had the season Texas had because they beat no-ranked teams. But in a way, I can kind of see a Rose Bowl 2.0 with this one because you're going to focus your attention on Jeremiah Smith naturally, but you're going to get gashed by Judkins and Travion Henderson. So that's just my take there. And even then, the offense for Texas hasn't really been that impressive, especially with Ohio State's pass rush. Like, I lost kind of how many sacks they had during the Rose Bowl. I didn't realize they got to 8. Like, I just don't see this one being, like, I mean, being a very intriguing game. If Texas covers, it'll be kind of like a late situation where they get a touchdown. Hey, onside kick with 30 seconds left. But yeah, this is my take, honestly. I just think Ohio State's the hottest team in the country, and Texas has not been impressive. They weren't impressive when they should have been against Arizona State.
Dano, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, man. I mean, consistency has been extremely hard to come by this season in college football, just writ large. You know, you look at the only team that's actually been consistent all season was Oregon. And, oh, by the way, they just laid an egg, an absolute egg against Ohio State. It seems like everybody has taken that at least that one bad loss somewhere along the line in the season. I mean, even Army took that one bad loss somewhere along the line in the season. You know, it's just like the season that we've had. The Buckeyes obviously took that one bad loss, but they bounced back. They've always had arguably the highest ceiling in college football. And clearly they're peaking at the right time. They totally can do this. I mean, it's a shame they got knocked out of the Big Ten championship game at a certain level, but I have an issue at a certain level with having a national champion that isn't a conference champion. Like, I think that is weird, but that doesn't change the fact that the Buckeyes have the best team right now, probably.
Yeah, for sure. And welcome to the playoff era, right?
Yeah, like right.
Everything about this 12-team playoff, interesting, but also kind of counterintuitive too, right? Like you would think a conference champion with a bye would destroy. We have
no conference champions. I don't like. Actively dislike that.
Which is insane because, again, the only two conference champions that won their bowl game was Army in the American and Ohio in the MAC. That's it. So – I mean, it's pretty nuts. So, Joe, what are your thoughts? How do you think
what is Notre Dame doing their conference championship? Oh, wait. Now I remember. Let's go, Irish. You're going to have to do it eventually. Join a conference. All right. I think earlier in the season, Texas would have had a clear-cut advantage, just kind of like the Oregon game. When Oregon played Ohio State, they were nowhere near the same team that played in the Rose Bowl. But with Ohio State, like I said a minute ago, I think they figured something out. And they remind me a lot of the team that they've been taking a beating to for 4 years in a row last year. They look a lot like Michigan, plus a top flight wideout. And I'll go even farther, two wideouts that are going to play on Sundays. Because if you cover him and you got the run stopped, well, who's covering Emeka Ogbuka? Yeah. That guy's a stud in his own right.
Yep.
But, you know, they have playmakers all over the field, and those playmakers are making plays. The defense finally looked elite against Tennessee and Oregon. And with Chip Kelly using his talent and said talent really executing properly, I don't see Texas winning after narrowly escaping ASU. I think the Buckeyes cover. I think the Buckeyes win their next two games, and they are the best team. And I think they're finally realizing themselves. And that's a scary thing for the opposition.
Yeah, I think that's the most special part is like even if you're not a Ohio State fan or a Big Ten fan, it's awesome to see the confidence that Will Howard has now versus the confidence that he had going even into the Michigan game, right? It is a stark contrast. It's like a different person by comparison to how he's playing now. As far as you know, this game is concerned, I'm more interested in the Buckeyes defense. Like that modified hybrid with Caleb Downs is like the strong safety / monster backer
draft pick
is working. And, you know, they completely threw Dylan Gabriel off because they were giving him looks that, you know, didn't look like a cover two or didn't look like a cover three. And so it made it a little bit more difficult. And the other part of it is we can all sit here and say that like Dylan Gabriel is not an athletic dude, but I would say he's slightly more athletic than Quinn Ewers. So if they slapped, you know, Dylan Gabriel round for 8 sacks, you're going to see at least one, maybe two pick sixes because Quinn Ewers, when he is under the gun and under pressure, he's shown this season that he's going to throw the ball away. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see. Go ahead,
Jim. No, I was just saying with the way they showed that look to Oregon, what about Jordan James? Oregon's RB1 went into the tent and said, no more, no mas, I'm done. He could have finished that game, and that's a lot of scuttlebutt around the locker room. Is that he basically said this game's over?
Yeah,
before the halftime,
he got he tapped out because he was getting socked in the mouth, and like that's some physical play, and that's one of the things that you see. And one of the other part of it is, and I'll touch on it really quickly offensively. I think Chip Kelly finally realized that he has a whole bunch of weapons on the offense, and he's opening up the playbook, like. You know, those long stretch plays with Jaden Smith and, you know, some of the long passes down the sideline, you know, those were swing passes, but the guys are so athletic, they're breaking loose. Like, who would have thought both Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson had 90-plus yards apiece rushing in that game, which is interesting. It'll be interesting to see what's going on. But speaking of what's going on, we've got somebody that can help you get a new mortgage. Dano, do you mind if you do the read?
I would love to do this read. Friends, if you have watched this show or listened to this show before, you know that Craig Oxane, area sales rep for the Money Store, sponsors As for Football. Craig is a member of the West Point class of 1994, licensed to lend in all 50 states, but based out of the great city of Chicago. He is one of the most successful VA lenders in the country, going to offer you super competitive rates, give you the best deal he possibly can, which matters because the mortgage process is freaking super confusing. Interest rates move all over the place, trying to figure out when to lock in, what not to do, what to do. You have to sign all this crazy paperwork. Don't know what all that stuff means. Man, you want to deal with somebody that you can pick up the phone and talk to that is an actual person, not a call center, not some random big box bank, not some mindless website. And friends, this is how the West Point Network functions, right? Craig is helping us stay in business here at As for Football, and we're trying to introduce you to the guy that can get you the best deal on a mortgage that we possibly can. It's too easy. That's just too easy. He helps us. We help you. That's West Point Network. Plus, Craig does not charge lending fees for veterans. That's a huge savings, like $1,300. Get that money, friends. I'm telling you, $1,300. Get that money. Craig Oxane, he's an area sales manager for the Money Store, sponsors this show. Check him out. Link's on our website. You just go down there, click on his little business card. You'll be talking to him in a couple of hours. It is too easy, and I'm telling you, he gets 5 stars for customer service from everybody that he works with.
Thanks, Dano. Yeah, so on to semifinal number two. You've got the Notre Dame Fighting Irish versus the Penn State University Nittany Lions. How do we get here? Penn State took their lumps in the Big Ten championship game. They lost to Oregon. Again, that 50-50 ball that Drew Aller threw in the fourth quarter, I'm still not sure why he threw it on second down. Makes me scratch my head. But that being said, you know, Penn State bounced back. They dominated the Ponies in the first round with 38-10. They also discovered that they got a duo in the backfield that can run the damn ball. I mean, they are really putting it together right now. Penn State took a total advantage. I personally thought the whiteout was not going to help them. The early afternoon whiteout actually turned out to be pretty good. They jumped on SMU early and didn't look back. They took it to the woodshed, and they also have what's called a defense at Penn State. Penn State also shut down the post-Heisman Trophy debate about who's the best Heisman Trophy candidate by completely shutting Ashton Dency down. He had just over 100 yards rushing, no TDs, and 2 forced fumbles. I think that's the first time in a handful of years that this may be the first time in a handful of years that Penn State is going to be able to shake off the B-plus tier of the Big Ten. I mean, if they make it to the national championship, I think people will start to respect them more rather than the team that always comes in, you know, third place to Penn State and Michigan or Ohio State and Michigan. Again, hey, the Fighting Irish, let's be real, like after they lost to NIU, they shaken it off. They've been pretty dominant for the rest of the season. They've won by 2 touchdowns plus for just about every game, and they've had a great margin of victories. The Irish have been winning, though, with an odd mix of rushing and ball control short passes, and that looks problematic. They look great against Indiana.
I would like to dissent and say, how is that problematic to run the ball and do ball control passing? Why is that wrong? Tom Brady made a career out of that.
Yeah, Tom Brady did. But explosive plays right now.
Hey.
But, you know, what we've seen the trend in college football this season is the team that has the most explosive plays is usually the team that wins. Right. You know, and so, you know, if you have a game manager who is what Riley Leonard looks like at Notre Dame, I mean, it puts the odds against you, particularly if you're playing against a higher caliber quarterback like Drew Aller.
Okay, know? I will hold my counter argument until it's my turn. So,
all right,
but I don't agree.
Okay, fair point. But again, they look good. They look great against Indiana. Like they confirmed that the Hoosiers are not an elite team. They just had a good season, and they had a competitive first half against Georgia. You know, who started their backup for the first time this season. I was hoping for a good contest, but like I checked out immediately after that long kick return. I was like, that's it. I think that was the nail in the coffin, to be honest, for Notre Dame against the I forget who they played now.
I'm Georgia.
Georgia, right? So what do we think is going to happen in this game? Dano, we'll open the floor to you since you've got some thoughts. Then we'll go to Joe and then Omar.
I mean, I just think Notre Dame has done everything that they can do. I mean, they beat Georgia bad. Are we pretending that Georgia is not the bully? They beat the bully bad. And, you know, take it however you want. That, listen, that Georgia defense is legit. And they, now say what you want about the offense with the number two quarterback, but that defense is good. And they made that defense look little. And, you know, so my counter argument with the game manager thing is that Riley Leonard is a game manager, except in the fact that he can run and change the game with his legs. That's and that true. that is huge. And, you know, how's that going to play out when he's a pro? Have no idea. But for in college, when the read option is a thing that kills, then I don't think it's fair to say a guy who can scramble for 15 yards on any given play is a game manager. I just, that's not managing the game. That's making something happen.
Well, that's fair. I mean, again, explosive plays are the difference. So if he gets 15 yards and Allard throws for 45, they're still losing the game. And that's what the way I'm looking at it. So if it's a quarterback duel, I think Drew Allard is a little bit more experienced in the respect of being in a much higher leverage games. Because again, if you look at Notre Dame's schedule this season, right? They lost to NIU, right?
They are a different team. They changed the offense completely.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They have leaned into the run, but again, explosive plays may be the difference in this one. And that's where I'm going to plant my flag. Is the team with the most explosive plays is probably going to win the game. Joe, over to you.
Yeah. I think the one thing that we haven't discussed is how similar both these teams are. Because if you take away Singleton's 60-yard touchdown against Boise and take away Jeremiah Love's 99-yarder against Indiana, both of these offense had subpar days, in my opinion, outside of those plays. So I think it comes down to defense. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say Penn State's defense is better than Georgia's defense this year. I think Penn State has a limb. They have what's that?
That is quite a limb to go out on.
Not every year, but they do have a top 10 red zone defense, Penn State, and Notre Dame likes to go for it inside the red zone on fourth down a lot. They don't kick a lot of field goals. Yeah. So my prediction is that this game is going to come down to a fourth and goal stop for Penn State and that they're going to win 24-20. And the reason why is I think they implement the big plays in the run game mixed with one or two big hitters to Tyler Warren. And that's the only difference. I think that Notre Dame is one of four teams to play primarily man coverage in the secondary. There's only four teams that did that more than 50% of the time. And they're one of them. I don't think that benefits you as much with a Penn State who doesn't have weapons all over in the passing game. But they do. Their two best weapons are usually checkdowns to the back outside of Tyler Warren. So you beat that with a good running game, and they've got their running game going, Penn State does. So I think they get the points where they need them, they get the turnovers where they need them, and they get a big stop and win in what is a really good football game.
Okay, that's fair. Omar, how about you?
Yeah, I think for this one, I got many thoughts on this one. First off, feels like the 1976 Gator Bowl in here. Last bowl meeting, anyone, right? Dan Devine versus Joe Paterno. Anyways, but I think what Dan was saying was interesting about Notre Dame beating the bully because, like you said, like Penn State, man, Nick Singleton, Ketyron Allen, great backs, but are we just going to act like Notre Dame didn't hold Georgia, who, you know, found itself a running football, big bad SEC, to 66 rushing yards? And the week before, Indiana had, I think, 63. So that's heavy on my mind. I'm not sold on Drew Aller either completely, like in these games, because we saw against Ohio State, they had four downs to get 1 yard and kill the narrative. They did not get that yard. Drew Aller has less than 200 passing yards in each of his playoff games, which, you know, I love running the ball. We're all Army fans. We love seeing teams run the ball, but it's like at a certain point, Notre Dame's going to shut that down and make Drew Aller win the game, which will not go well, I think, for Penn State. And also, too, Penn State, they've been great at forcing turnovers. I think Notre Dame's going to take care of the ball, like 7 turnovers. I don't think Notre Dame will have more than 1 or 2 turnovers, if that, which really forces Penn State and Drew Aller in the passing game to win the game for them. I also think it's interesting, too, because this could be James Franklin's first top five win against win against an AP top five team, excuse me, since the infamous field goal block in 2016. I watched the video and I was like, how has he not gotten a top five win since then? Which I have to share, nothing against James Franklin, but I think the nickname Little Game James Franklin is probably one of the funniest like nicknames I've seen in college football.
It's got to sting his pride.
It does. It has, like, that's just my thoughts. Like, I think Notre Dame I think Notre Dame wins this one, honestly, because Penn State has been great. They've shaken the narratives and everything, but I really think they've met their match with this Notre Dame team, which I'm just going to leave with this. I wonder what Thomas Hammack told Marcus Freeman, because, man, ever since that conversation, like Thomas Hammack really sacrificed Northern Illinois' year, you know, just for Notre Dame, you know, Potato Bowl and everything. It's crazy. We had a Potato Bowl participant with a win over a playoff team, and they somehow did not promote that more. Like, why wouldn't you promote that? Like, we have a team with a top five win in our bowl game. Come to Idaho. And
for sure. Now, you know, I will say this, you know, I do have concerns about Drew Aller as a quarterback, because, again, like I said, that 50-50 ball on second down against Oregon was really telling about where his headspace was for decision making. We're a little bit later in the season. He's had a little bit more opportunity to get coached up and kind of watch some film, so he may not make that decision again. But again, I think this is going to boil down to explosive plays, whoever gets the most explosive plays. So, you know, Penn State has the ability to do it. They've got their two running backs that are a decent 1-2 punch. Their wide receiving corps is decent. Their tight end is a monster. That guy can get an explosive play of 25 plus yards on his own. Right. Same thing. Jeremiah Love could break loose for 60, 70 yards, and that could completely change the whole complexion of the contest. So I'm not saying that, you know, it's going to be an easy walk for Penn State or Notre Dame. I think both of these teams are fairly evenly matched. It, you know, I would certainly take the under if I was betting on this game, because I legitimately think that defense is going to show up on both sides. I think Penn State's defense is very aggressive. Riley Leonard has been nicked up in the past. He could get nicked up in this game. I doubt that he will, but if he gets hit a couple times, you know, on a crazy scramble or something like that, that could also change the complexion of the game. But all that being said, I'm going to pick the Nittany Lions, just because I think realistically the Fighting Irish's chances are about the same opportunity as meeting Monty Teo's girlfriend. So I think so. Sorry about the deep cut for those of you guys that are old fans, but I legitimately think, like, one of these two teams have reached a ceiling, and I legitimately think that it's Notre Dame this time. And if not, hey, I'll gladly eat crow as long as the championship game is a good one. I mean, I don't want to turn it off at halftime because I'm bored to death. All right, moving on. And speaking of mysteries and elusive people, let's talk about Joe's Blue Falcon of the Week.
Well, it's been a season of firsts for the Blue Falcon of the Week award, so why not have another first at the end? What's different about this week's is that we have the first nameless, faceless Blue Falcon of the Week. You guys remember the Bud Light commercial, Real Men of Genius? Well, today we recognize you, college bowl game opt-out student athlete. I completely understand the logic behind it, but if you look at the percentage of players out there that are out there for the last time and will never play football again, I feel like you're tempting fate and a touch arrogant by saying that your career is just getting started, when it quite possibly could be the end, not to be, you know, doom and gloom with you opting out of a game. Look at Jake Butt from Michigan. You know, he didn't know when his last game was going to be right before he was about to be drafted in the first round. Now, I know that that's what people use as an excuse to sit out, but still, you have things like Cam Ward. You have things like running backs in the middle of a game who weren't opt-outs opting out. And I just feel like it's become too fashionable and too accepted. People get hurt in the NFL combine or in the preseason of the NFL in their rookie year all the time and never play again. We just don't know their names because a lot of them probably opted out of their final game in college. Take that for what it's worth or take it with a grain of salt. But for those reasons and the fact that watching some of these college football bowl games is like getting teeth pulled out, I can't explain the frustration of trying to handicap those. College football, bowl game opt-outs, you are this week's Blue Falcon. And be careful, because this might be the last award you get that's related to football.
Nice. Fair point. Yeah, it's about time to get the T-shirt cannon out and start launching them all over college football teams because of the
opt-out. I know that's a little ridiculous, but being a football nerd, so many of those games.
No, it is frustrating. Like, I mean, you understand – we all understand why people make business decisions. I mean, everybody makes a business decision every day, but to watch Cam Ward play a half and then come out of the game, I know he told his team, right? But it's wherever you work, if you walk out in the middle of the project, just like, don't give your 2 weeks notice. You just walk out.
Yeah.
What are you going?
I'm sorry. My business model is too important for my future. And it's like, you don't have a business yet. Like, yeah. Come on, man.
Yeah, and, yeah, so. I mean, and yeah, I agree. Like, look, you know, case in point, and we're going to pile on a little bit with the Army talk, but, like, look at what happened to Army. Like, you had a conference champion versus conference champion bowl game, which would have been a great opportunity for both schools, great for recruiting,
great
for TV time, you know, based off of all the behind-the-scenes stuff and the interviews and everything, coaches' interactions, player interactions, they had a great time. Guess what, Marshall? You missed out on a great opportunity because you chose to not pay your coach. And again, that's probably a front office thing that we had nothing to deal with, but like 32 players jumping ship and transferring to another school in the same conference, dude, that just hurts, you know? And it's a bad look for college football. It's a bad look for the conference. And, you know, I think James from Brigade Review said this. It's like, hey, look, if you have a large number of opt-outs in your bowl game and it causes the bowl game to get canceled or the opponents to shift, you should get a one-year postseason ban. And I'm okay with that, you know?
Yeah, they could have not accepted the bowl game because it was pretty obvious what was going to happen.
Yeah,
and then if they do that, then the dominoes fall completely differently.
Yeah, I mean, I think it merits the discussion, right? And again, it's going to get even crazier because, you know, as we get into the next season with the, you know, the revenue sharing model and the name, image, and likeness continuing to be what it is, like, these universities are going to have some cash to throw around or have some in reserve for name, image, and likeness to play these players to keep them around for the bowl game. But the reality of it is like, yes, we say name, image, and likeness isn't pay to play. Clearly it isn't because of all the opt-outs, right? That needs to get fixed somehow. I don't know how to do it because it's like, it's, you know, there's 119,000 college football players at the FBS level. I don't know how to fix that for that many people without like some pretty staunch regulation, but it's pretty disappointing, you know, watching a whole team say deuces, we're in the portal.
This is another conversation for later in the offseason, but you know, the trickle down effects on every sport that's not football or basketball are also pretty bad. Not so much for Army service academies, but everywhere else in America, your opportunities are about to shrink. And yeah.
Look at adding an additional year of eligibility, right? We talked about a fifth year of eligibility. Yeah. So now you've got dudes like, you know,
Jim Morris, you got dudes, 24 years old, transferring to, I don't remember where he went, but that is like insane.
Who cares? The kid's 90 years old, freaking, you know, he's going to be in a wheelchair, freaking taking snaps under center because he's been in college for so long. Like at some point, you know, I think we're all willing to accept like the extra year eligibility for COVID. I don't think anybody's going to complain about that, but gee whiz, guys, like Frank Harris was like 37 years old when he quote,
Jerry Morris is going to be a year older than Frank Harris was next year.
That's gross.
That's
gross.
That's crazy. I mean, he's like, you look at the quarterbacks, NFL quarterbacks who are 25.
Yeah.
That's where this dude is.
Yeah. That's that. And honestly, it's like, look, your best bet is to leave when you have the opportunity, because the opportunity is going to show itself. If you watch the freaking games this weekend, Michael Penix Jr. is now the starting quarterback as a rookie for the Atlanta Falcons. Hey, he may not win a Super Bowl this year, but guess what? He's in the game and he's playing. He's leading his team. And it's because, you know, the team invested in him and he came, you know, he showed up. And again, you can't show up in the pros if you're still playing, you know, at whatever university that you were selected to start at. Anyway, speaking of selections, let's move on to our weekly locks.
Weekly locks.
All right, weekly locks are going to be a little bit different this week. We're just going to be like, hey, who's going to win the Natty? What's your call for the over-under? Who wins the 2024 hardware? We'll start with Joe, go to Omar, and we'll close out with Dano.
All right, I said I got Ohio State winning over Texas. Also, take the over in that game. And I've got Penn State winning a close one against Notre Dame, and I take the under in that one. Then I think I got Ohio State winning it all in an all Big Ten national title.
Oh, okay. Omar, how about you?
So I got Ohio State beating Texas, and then I got Notre Dame beating Penn State, and then I really feel like this is the year Notre Dame's going to break through for a national title. I really feel it. Like, look, I mean, I think it's great. I think the whole Notre Dame myth making is great. And I know, Joe, you said that Notre Dame's going to have to go to a conference. I'm like, I don't think they will. Like, there's been stories about Notre Dame getting millions of dollars by themselves. And I'm like, I think that'll sustain them for a while. And like, you know, Army, I guess we only got like $10,000 from our Independence Bowl, you know, because we're not independent anymore. So like, I think it's sustainable. Like, people are going to continue to schedule Notre Dame because...
Well, it's beneficial to them.
Yeah. Well, they've got NBC. Yeah. That, so if you've got your own dedicated broadcast network,
they don't want to become Nebraska or Penn State, you know.
Oh yeah, exactly. But I guess long story short, I got Notre Dame. Like I do. I feel like this is the year. You know, I just do.
All right, Dano, how about you?
I agree. Unfortunately, I got Buckeyes beating Texas. I would love to see Texas win, but I just don't think they can. I think Irish versus Penn State is a pretty close game. And I don't know how strongly I believe the Irish can really beat Ohio State. I sort of think Ohio State has the best team, but if Notre Dame is ever going to win, this is absolutely their best chance in forever. And a better chance is not coming along. So I guess I'll take them reluctantly, even though, you know, feel like Touchdown Jesus going to have to put a thumb on the scale for that one.
Yeah, for sure. Nice. Well played, Dano. So I got the Buckeyes and the Nittany Lions. I think I agree with Joe. It's going to be the All Big Ten Championship. And I think part of the reason why I want that to happen is just, you know what, for supremacy, screw it. Like, I'm tired of people talking about the SEC. It just means more. Well, it's just going to mean more while you're sitting on the couch watching other teams play football. So I'm down for that. I think, you know, as an Army fan, I would like to see Notre Dame at least make it to the national championship because of the strength of schedule argument, because, like, you know, I think everybody wants to see that happen. But to be honest, like, Notre Dame making it to the Natty or not is not going to change the outcome of Army season. It's 12 wins. It's probably the best season in the history of Army football, you know, best showing for an Army player in the Heisman voting in a very, very long time. And Bryson Daly, you know, got 32 touchdowns, and Ashton Jente didn't even show up in his playoff game. So I'm happy with that. I don't need to see Notre Dame make it to the national championship to throw another feather in Army's cap, because I think Army's already done it. You know, now, all that being said, take the under in this game. It's 52.5. I think it'll be a lot closer to that. 2 weeks ago, the hottest team in college football was Arizona State. That team is now the Ohio State Buckeyes. If Will Howard goes into these next two playoff games as confident as he did in the previous two, it's a wrap. You know, statistically, he'll throw for 600 yards in the next two games, because he's going to average about 300 per. And do not be surprised if the 1-2 punch of Quinshon Judkins and, you know, Travion Henderson get about 180, 200 yards between the both of them, a couple touchdowns. I think that's within the realm of the possible. Again, upsets happen. That would be great too. I think as long as I think everybody can live with the four teams that are in the semis right now. I think we can all agree that they're probably the four best teams in college football. I think there's going to be a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth. I know Paul Feinbaum probably was crying in his coffee when he had to break down and say that the SEC was not the number one conference in college football this season. And, like, Bama fans are still, like, touting that flag, like, 9-3, man, we could have made it. It's like, yeah.
Michigan sitting back here going, could you have? Really, could you have?
Yeah, right. I mean, it is what it is. It's college football. I mean, this year has been kind of wacky. It's been enjoyable to watch, though. So going into the semis, and hey, guess what, folks? We're at the end of the show. Semis are at the end of the week. You got games Thursday and Friday, so make sure that you tune in and watch those. I think both of them will be good regardless. And be on the lookout for As for Lax. We've already changed the logo. It's floating around on the socials already. And look for other Army spring sports coverage. Like, we're looking forward to – you know, continue to produce content. Like, hey, if you are a baseball writer and you like baseball, you need to message Dan.
No. We've got baseball writers.
We got baseball writers.
A women's lacrosse writer.
So, ladies, Lady Lax. So, if you are a women's lacrosse fan, please pony up, you know, stick a paw in, and we'll get you signed up for, you know, As for Lax. Because,
yeah,
again,
yeah, I need somebody who actually understands the contact rules in women's lacrosse, because I find it maddening.
Yeah, for sure. But again, this is the end of the show. And oh, on another note, two things that I want to tell you. A little bit of history for those of you that don't know. Al Davis modeled the Oakland Raiders jerseys after the Army football team,
way back in the day. And speaking of Army football, Andre Carter is now the defensive end for the Las Vegas Raiders. So he's wearing the silver and black now. You know, it's not going to change the outcome of the Raiders season, but, you know, it's always nice to see an Army graduate still have the opportunity to perform at a higher level, because it's great for the team, particularly with all of the craziness that's going on in the world with name, image, and likeness and all this other stuff. I think, you know, incoming President Trump will probably go back to give the people, you know, give the folks the opportunities to play professionally if they qualify or get drafted. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But all that being said, for the crew here at the As for Football College Football Roundtable, we're going to close this one out. Enjoy the semifinals this weekend. I'm Rob, the Angry Colonel, calling out of Fayetteville, North Carolina. We've got Omar, the Burger Popper, calling out of Georgia. We got Dano Icabesa calling to you out of coastal Connecticut, and Trigger Joe from the home of the Big House. Hey, it's been great covering college football for you this season at As for Football. And as always, beat Navy.
Beat them.
Thanks for joining us on the As for Football College Football Roundtable. Special thanks to our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. If you're buying or selling, reach out to Jocelyn for expert service. If you enjoy the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/AsForFootball. Your support will help keep the lights on and bring in more great content. Plus, you'll get access to exclusive perks and behind-the-scenes extras. Thanks for being a part of the As for Football community. Go Army, beat Navy, and we'll catch you guys next week.